Welcome to Movie Maniacs. Mike Rags and Chuck Curry discussing the greatest movies of all time and all the new films in theaters and streaming that you need to know about. Like us, rate us, share us. Now, here are your hosts, Mike Rags and Chuck Curry.
All right, we are back with another edition of Movie Maniacs. Now, if you're listening on WoWo 1190 and 107.5 FM, the second half of the show, we will look back at the greatest faith-based movies of all time, since it is Easter weekend. Of course, Good Friday today, and Holy Saturday, and Easter Sunday, Sunday, and it's a little bit different for all of us. There's no doubt about it, especially churches across the nation. I'm Mike Rags. I bring in Chuck Curry now. He's at a remote location being quarantined as well. Chuck, this has maybe the most surrealistic feel to an Easter Sunday weekend I think I've ever had. There's no doubt.
I would tend to agree without a doubt. You know, you mentioned the word faith. I get it. At this point, having a little faith might not be a bad thing to have. I could only hope that this is going to play out in the current weeks, in the next few months, in a positive direction. Hopefully, Mike, we wrap our mind around having a little bit of a vision or a mindset to have some light at the end of the tunnel here, because that's what's going to keep our mental health in a decent, and I say decent, not a good, but a decent place. And that's where we want to be, at least.
A survivable place, to say the least. And we talked about it last week about how no movies being released in theaters, obviously, and video on demand getting hotter and hotter. Now, Trolls will come out world tour today. You can download it for $19.99 wherever you stream, whether it's Apple Plus or Amazon, whatever you want to do. So there's that this weekend. And Chuck, you got word too that they're starting to lower some of the rates for some of these early release movies.
Yeah, I mean, Birds of Prey had a theatrical run, but right at the tail end of its theatrical run, like every other film that was in theaters, have gone to VOD, video on demand. Initially, Warner Brothers set the price, like all these other newer films, at $19.99, but they have just recently lowered that price this week to $4.99. I have Blue Ridge Cable here in the Poconos of Pennsylvania. I just checked this morning to see what movies were on Blue Ridge Cable, Mike. There was The Hunt, The Invisible Man, and that was just theatrical, right? Division. I looked at new releases and I saw Birds of Prey, Harley Quinn, $4.99. And I read yesterday in an article, when Warner Brothers did that, it went right to the top of the charts on iTunes. Now, we've talked about this last week on the show, which I think is a really interesting topic. What is the price point at what viewers at home are willing to pay for new releases that they have not seen in the theater? High-priced, high-profile, high-production product like Birds of Prey. I did say, and I still believe, $19.99 is a psychological price point for me. For most part, I won't touch. You get to $4.99, I'm all in. You get to $9.99, I'm thinking heavily about it. But $19.99 to me is still a heavy price point. I guess if they ever decided, I don't think they're going to do it, but let's just say they said, hey, we're going to release the new James Bond film for $19.99. Yeah, I'm going to pay it. But I do think a cheaper price point is going to flood the market with people paying it all day long. Certainly $4.99 for Birds of Prey. I think you're going to get heavy interest in that one. I think ultimately it's going to be a good price point for Warner Brothers.
Now, we talk about the boom in streaming, obviously. I wonder how long that lasts, though, Chuck. If more people stay unemployed, they're going to have to start cutting some benefits of life, cutting some of their streaming service, I would believe, their paid streaming services. I mean, $7.99 or $8.99 for Amazon Prime and Netflix will start adding up. You're going to have to start trimming fat somewhere.
Well, obviously, this is not a long-term long-term economic game plan. Nobody wants this to go on long-term. Short-term, I think a lot of eyeballs are going to be on streaming. If you look at Netflix, just released their viewership for their documentary Tiger King. I have not seen it yet. I hear it's, have you seen it?
I have seen it. Yeah, I talked last week. It is quite compelling. Yeah.
Yeah, but 34 million viewers have tuned in the first 10 days to its doc, Tiger King. That is the all-time record for Netflix, even surpassing the viewership, Mike, of Stranger Things Season 2.
That's incredible.
It really is incredible.
And they're we're really not into movie news, but the Tiger King, they are going to produce another episode for Netflix, hosted by Joel McHale, So they're going to do one more episode there.
Right.
Which will get huge viewership. And I know TMZ is producing something for Fox, I believe, that airs this weekend. So it's definitely caught the imagination of the world. And I wonder, somebody poses on social media, how popular would that series have been if we weren't under quarantine?
No, it would not. Here's the thing. This is a psychological point. A month or 2 months ago, when people went on Netflix or streaming, they were seeing what they could watch.
Right.
Now they're seeking out what they want to watch. Right. There's a more psychological point of, I want to watch something. I need to watch something. What do you have to offer me? Versus a more of a casual look at what is available. It's a Friday night. I want to watch something. This is a different psychology.
Yeah, you speak about psychology, and I'll get into what we have been watching. And I did finish off Ozark season 3, but I don't want to call it depression because that kind of a little bit of hyperbole, but when you're done with a season now, as opposed to when you're done to a season under normal times, it just hits you like, now what am I going to want? I mean, now there's nothing. Like, you could pace out that show over the course of a few months if you want to. Well, now, since you're not doing anything, you bang it out in 3 days and you're like, well, all those characters that I come to enjoy that I can space out over a certain amount of time, they're done in a weekend. And now I don't get Jason Bateman and you know, for another year if I'm lucky. And by the way, season 3 is a whopper of a season. I know that it got some slack that it went off the rails a little bit this year. I didn't think so. I thought Laura Linney and Jason Bateman put in gangbuster performances. It's a great ending, good new characters developed. I really liked it a lot, especially the ending, how it ends. So setting up the season 4. But you know what I'm saying? It's like,
I do. You bring up a good point. Here's the point. The point is the word exhaustion. The product, the high-profile product that we really want to watch and we look forward to, will get exhausted very quickly. And then people will say, okay, what else is next? And then the stuff that we've highly anticipated will be viewed already.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it's gone.
And then it's gone.
And who's in production to do another season anyway? That's the thing.
They're not. And this stuff's going to be going forward. This stuff is going to be delayed. So what you would expect, say, in 8 months or 9 months or even a year is going to be delayed to maybe a year and a half. And we talked about this the other day off air. We talked about CBS is going to do a Sunday night movie starting May 3rd, which are going to air Raiders of the Lost Ark, bring back some of the older classics, followed by, I believe, Forrest Gump on May 10th, Mission Impossible May 17th, Titanic the 24th of May, and then they're going to do Indiana Jones in the Last Crusade. People are going to have to deal with the commercials, which you don't have to deal with on streaming. But I guess the question is to you, would you view Raiders of the Lost Ark on CBS on a Sunday night? Do you think that's going to be relevant today's culture or climate?
And at a side note, what about a week ago? I think I texted to you, was there anything better than the ABC Sunday night movie?
And then no.
At 9 o'clock, if your parents were lucky enough to let you stay up to watch the re-showing of Jaws 2 or Poseidon Adventure, or even Beyond the Poseidon Adventure for that matter, Chuck, a little call for you.
Got to go beyond, Mike.
Yeah, but there was nothing better than that. So there is a bit of nostalgia there.
I agree.
CBS didn't have the footing that ABC did on Sunday nights. But there is a bit of a nostalgia there. But the minute the first commercial comes on, Indiana Jones is on Netflix right now. Just watch it there. So I do like the nostalgia angle of it. They are desperate for programming.
But for the network's point of view, I'm sure they're going to buy the rights. They're not going to pay too much in comparison to what they would for a new movie for the rights. If they get 5 million viewers, it's a home run.
I think it'd be smarter. I think they'd be smarter to pull some of their CBS Access stuff up and show All in the Family in its entirety, and start putting out old programming like that.
You can be creative like that. I think that would. I think if you did it right, you take the stuff that's brilliant in their library, like All in the Family,
MASH re-show MASH.
And what you could do, like what ABC did with the live versions of All in the Family and Good Times, CBS could take some of the classic episodes of All in the Family and Good Times, put it back on the slate. And I think to a point, I think that stuff would catch on.
I think so too. I think there'd be a certain aspect of binge watching there. And now you're taking away from your streaming audience that you think you have. Mm-hmm. But if you're that desperate for programming on the major network, sooner or later you're going to get desperate to put
something. I mean, if ABC aired 10 of the classic episodes of Happy Days, you want to know? I'd watch it too.
And maybe have Henry Winkler pop on a Zoom and say, hey, this episode I love, introduce each episode. I think there's something there.
I completely concur and 100% agree with you.
All right, one more thing before we go to movie news. I have to eat crow, and I'm not happy about doing it. There's no secret that on these shows I give a certain actor a lot of slack, the fallen actor, you know.
This ain't a Gerard Butler moment, is it?
It's a Gerard Butler moment.
Really?
I did watch The Angel Has Fallen on Netflix, and I have to admit that it was a highly entertaining B-action movie put over the top by a really good performance by Nick Nolte that I did not see coming at all. I knew he was in it, Chuck, but the amount of acting he does in this movie sets this aside from a normal B movie. He's all in.
Really?
He's as good as he is in Prince of Tides and Warrior. And
really?
He's really.
And good. I listen, Nick Nolte. I love me some Nick Nolte. He's one of my old time favorites.
I highly recommend his performance here. And yes, the third part of the Banning series is there's really no surprise who the villains are. There's no twist. There's lots of action and gunfire and all that stuff. But it really is brisk. It's you don't have to think much, and you get some really good performances, and you can stand Gerard Butler for a good hour and 45 minutes. Okay. I got to give him credit. This one is
all right.
Yes. So
very good
to him.
Very good. Did you feel, was that a cathartic moment in your life?
I don't know. I'm sure he'll be right off the boat. The next movie, Hunter Killer 2, comes out.
All right.
And then we'll
give him, cut him some slack. Let him live. Let him free.
All right. So, and I know all you've been doing is watching The Walking Dead. So I think people are probably.
I got to tell you, season 10 of The Walking Dead, kudos again to showrunner Angela King. I think he's done a phenomenal job. Resurrection of getting that show to, I think, a high level. I always thought the show was good throughout its entire run. It's had a couple, you know, slight peaks and valleys, but overall I've enjoyed the show tremendously throughout its run. And I think the last two seasons have been really, really good. And as good as it's ever been, kudos to Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who I think has done a great job in the redemption of the Negan character. You know, when Andrew Lincoln left the show as Rick Grimes, a lot of people felt that the show could not go on. It has gone on and is very effective, and they've used other characters like the Daryl Dixon character played by Norman Reedus, and all the other people have stepped up. A lot of supporting characters have become more front. Stream on the show, and show works, and I am looking very much forward to the last episode this season, which has been delayed because they have not been able to get it through in post-production, but it will air sometime in the next 2 or 3 months, hopefully. But I like what I see. It's been real good.
All right, we'll do Fast Five today too.
Okay.
And we'll do that in a second. Let's do some movie news. The only thing I saw was Universal developing a remake of Night of the Hunter, the great Robert Mitchum movie from back in 1955. He plays a sadistic killer in the Great Depression in the South. Really one of his signature roles. And it just got me to thinking, Chuck, who in the hell has the star power that Robert Mitchum had back then that could actually fill that role?
I'm sure they'll pick somebody. I don't know the answer to that question. You know, if you look in the libraries of what they're doing, they just announced the other day they're going to do a modern remake of a film that's modern, Nicole Kidman's horror film, The Others. They're going to remake that one. That was a terrific movie. And, you know, when you're remaking movies that are within 20 years, you have to say to yourself, there's nothing original you could do other than that. Don't really understand why you'd want to do that. But I get why they would do Night of the Hunter. It's, you know, an older classic, but I guess remakes and reboots and sequels always going to be part of the product pipeline going forward, Mike.
Well, Chuck, I think we want anything in the pipeline at this point in time. You can make, you know, we give them crap about not having ideas or anything like that. I don't care. Just get behind the camera and start making movies so we can go back to the movies. That at this point in time, I want anything.
I do also. I got one bit of, I guess, TV news of interest. Disney Plus announcing it's going to reboot the 1980s, 90s series Doogie Howser, MD. Made a big household name out of Neil Patrick Harris at the time. I was a big fan of that show, Mike. I like that show.
Me too.
Tremendously. This reboot's going to be set in Hawaii. They're going to use a female lead. on that show. I guess for Disney Plus, this is a good idea, Mike.
Yeah.
I think so.
Will there be a Vinny that comes through the
– Probably. There'll be some variation of Vinny. Max Casella was his name, who wound up being on The Sopranos.
Yes.
When the Sopranos, a great TV show on HBO, he was part of that series. But their bonding relationship between Neil Patrick Hauser and Max Casella was pretty good. That was a good show.
Remember what it was teamed up with on ABC's on Tuesday nights, right? What was on before it?
Don't remember.
The Wonder Years. It was the Wonder Years. And Doogie Howser back to back. See, now if they brought that back, I'd watch those shows again, and I love those two shows. I think it would work.
A couple other bits of movie news. Oh, actually, speaking of VOD, the David Bautista movie, My Spy, which has been teased and trailered for the last 4 or 5 months, going to go right to it's going to go to Amazon Plus.
All right, you done? Let's do Fast Five here.
Let's go.
All right, I know you did your segment on your other show there about Steven Seagal. So let's start with Stevie, who's 68 years old. He's pushing 70, Steven Seagal, and he's still making some VOD movies, Chuck, that go the action movies where he's about 45 pounds overweight, but he's still doing it.
You know, here's what's interesting about Steven Seagal. By all accounts, he's not the most likable guy. And a lot of people can't stand him in the industry. There's a lot of stories in the Me Too movement that came out about him. We're just talking about Steven Seagal. It's his birthday. He's 69 years old. If you look back at his career, it's a really interesting one because he really hit the road. He hit the floor running back in 1988 with a movie called Above the Law. Almost instantaneously became a nice size box office hit. Yep. Everything he did for the next like 5 or 6 years hit at the box office. Hard to Kill in 1990, A Mark for Death 1990, Out for Justice 91. And then in 1992, Warner Brothers, who were footing the bill on those films, rolled the dice and put him in a big budget movie, big production value, big supporting cast, Tommy Lee Jones, Gary Busey, big director Andrew Davis, and I'm talking about Under Siege. And Under Siege was a really good film. It was a Die Hard clone. It's basically, let's put Die Hard on a naval ship. And I thought that was a really good film. I still think it's the best film that he's done in terms of production value and entertainment value and supporting cast and direction around him. It was a big hit at the box office. From there, he did a movie which he got a chance to direct, On Deadly Ground. Michael Caine played the villain. Not the greatest movie, but he did get a chance to direct that movie. And then his most interesting project, I think, from a head-scratching point of view, was a 1996 Executive Decision. He gets top billing alongside Kurt Russell. People walk into a movie theater and then expecting to watch a Steven Seagal movie opposite a really cool co-star in Kurt Russell. And in the first act of Executive Decision, Mike, he gets killed.
Yeah.
And then leaving the door open to make it a Kurt Russell movie. I remember sitting there in the theater going, like, did that really happen?
I loved it.
And then it turns into a great Kurt Russell movie.
It does.
Co-starring Halle Berry and Oliver Platt. It's a really, really, really good film. And that movie was directed by Andrew Baird, who was the...
Stuart Baird,
who was cinematographer, right, on Die Hard. Terrific movie. And then after that, Steven Seagal has some trouble getting his footing in the business, making subpar movies.
Yeah.
And then ultimately his career goes straight to DVD one after the other.
Packing on the pounds didn't help.
No. But here's what his Steven Seagal's career did in the industry. Why it's an important career. Cause it opened the door for other action stars besides Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger at the time. You made a movie star out of Jean-Claude Van Damme back in that time period. Yeah. Right? My favorite Jean-Claude Damme movie still, Sudden Death. And I also like Time Cop a lot. And then remember, here's two names I'm going to throw at you. You probably remember Jeff Speakman.
Not
a DVD action movies.
Yeah.
How about Cynthia Roddick, DVD?
Yeah.
So it opened the door for other people to enter the action genre. And of course, Chuck Norris was, I think before that, Norris is more of a 70s guy. But an interesting time period for action in Hollywood, Mike, in the 1990s.
So put your money down on one thing. You're putting Under Siege is better than Executive Decision?
Well, I look at it more as a Steven Seagal movie because he's the star of the whole film.
All right.
But here's another thing. Under Siege 2, I remember the day Under Siege 2 comes out, right? It's not screened in advance for critics.
Right.
Siskel and Ebert review it and like the film a lot.
Yes.
I go to a theater and watch it. And I got to tell you, Mike, I dug the hell out of Under Siege 2, Dark Territory. I thought it was a lot of fun. If even to this day, if I have to pop in a Blu-ray to kill an hour and a half of my time, that's one of my go-tos. I enjoy the heck out of Under Siege 2, Dark Territory. So I wish he did more Under Siege movies as the character of Casey Ryback, the cook who kicks serious ass in movie.
Universal ain't going to let him use that character anymore, that's for sure.
No, Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers. No. You know, on his production slate, he's listed as making, I think, 57 movies. I think he's done a lot more than that with these DVD stuff. But on the pre-production, it has Above the Law 2. Oh. I don't think that's going to happen, though.
Probably not. I wonder if Henry Silva will be in that one.
Maybe. No, I don't think so.
I don't think so. All right, Chuck. Another one is Kristen Stewart, who actually turns 30 this weekend, Easter weekend. And, of course, most known, I think, as Bella in the Twilight series. Very interesting actress on screen. I remember seeing her for the first time in Panic Room as the daughter of Jodie Foster, who I thought was the son of Jodie Foster for the first 10 minutes of the movie, and then figured out she was a girl. I really liked her in the movie she stars opposite with Adventureland.
Adventureland's really good. And then she did a new, I think, because I'm not looking at my computer right now. She did a movie, I think, off the top of my head called In the Land of Women.
Yeah.
Meg Ryan. Yeah. I really like that film a lot. She's a supporting role in that movie. She's really good in certain things she's really good in. But she's a very internal type of an actress, which could be frustrating to watch, like she was in the Twilight films for me. Yeah. But certain things I do find her appealing.
All right. Well, we'll get to some bigger actors here in a second. But let's do Robin Wright real quick here, who's had a long career up until a couple of years ago at the Wonder Woman movies as well. Believe it or not, she's 54 years old, looks fantastic, always appealing on screen. And I know you loved her in one of your favorite movies, Toys.
Well, here's the thing. I'm glad you brought that up. When she pops up on screen in Toys, I said to myself, that's the next Julia Roberts.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
Camera loves this woman.
Yeah.
I remember seeing her in a movie called State of Grace.
Yep, very good.
I really like that film.
Is she always Jenny, though? Let's face it. She's
Jenny's
right?
A big part of her bio for a lot of people.
And she's got a great role on – I'm not a big House of Cards fans, but I know a lot of people love her in that.
Sure. She's been a name. There's no doubt she's been a name in the business. Hey. Very few people could equal the next Julia Roberts, though.
Very few people.
That's a tough shoe to fill.
Very few people could live with Sean Penn and
probably
live to tell about it, to tell you the truth. All right, two big ones here, Chuck. We'll start with Andy Garcia, who one of my favorite actors of all time. He's 64 years old. He's done some wonderful work, obviously, The Untouchables and Godfather 3 back to back that are just great.
Well, you know, here's the interesting part about Andy Garcia. When you watch him in, I still say, you know, because again, this week in movie history is the birthday also of Francis Ford Coppola.
Right.
Right. And if you look back at the career of Francis Ford Coppola, it's certainly a really interesting one. Rule of Roost in the 70s, you could argue Godfather 1 and 2. That storytelling has never been better in a movie than those two films. The type of movie he made, the way he told stories, the pacing, the patience he had developing scenes, you're probably never going to see that again in studio filmmaking.
No.
Because the attention span of people is different. Having said that, tell me one person, young or old, who doesn't change the channels when The Godfather 1 or 2 are on A&E or AMC, and it's not completely absorbed and compelled to watch those movies from beginning to end. But then you go back to look at Godfather 3, and the first, we've talked about this many a time, the first half of Godfather 3, to me, is excellent. And Andy Garcia is really the main reason. He is electrifying Andy Garcia in Godfather 3. He's electrifying. And that scene in the apartment when those two robbers come in,
great stuff,
with Bridget Fonda, to me, is just like, holy cow, is this guy awesome in this movie? And then you look at The Untouchables, how good Andy Garcia is. And then I'll pick another movie, When a Man Loves a Woman.
Yeah, good one.
Opposite Meg Ryan. And, you know, it's interesting. That was a Touchstone release back in the day, Mike, and that was marketed completely wrong. It was marketed as a love story. And while it is a love story, it is something so much more And it is a really hard-looking, hard-hitting, gripping movie on addiction and how it affects family life. And it's a very true-to-life movie. And Andy Garcia is really damn good in that movie.
And I want to bring up another a New York City movie, too, that he did, Night Falls on Manhattan, that I really enjoyed, where he plays a DA whose father's a dirty cop. It's really good. David Mamet. And, you know, Chuck, he's still doing great work. There are three roles recently that he stood out in. And I liked him a lot. I know you love Ghostbusters, the female version. I thought he was very funny in that. He got a small role. He's also got a small role in Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again.
Fun in that.
But he's very fun, especially at the end when he realizes Cher is his long-lost love. He's got a great scene there. But how good was he in the couple of scenes he's in The Mule with Clint Eastwood? He is so good as the drug kingpin. Just a couple of scenes, he's got really great delivery in that
film. I agree. And I like, listen, I like that movie a lot, The Mule. I do. And I like it a lot.
And a lot of it has to do with the great cast along with him. Last but not least, Chuck, a guy who's kind of been a B-lead actor for all of his life. He's 66 years old. Dennis Quaid, who's had one interesting career. There's no doubt about it. He's always been on the peripheral of being a star for four decades, whether it's the 70s, 80s, 90s, or 2000s. He's kind of making big movies, but he's not the big star, whether it's The Day After Tomorrow or The Rookie, and you go back to Breaking Away and all those movies. He's always on the
peripheral. Well, if you don't, listen, if you don't judge actors by box office alone, if you look at his work, if you look at a movie like The Rookie, I mean, he's all in it. He's awesome. That's an awesome sports film.
Yes.
That is an awesome sports film. And they just aired that actually on ESPN. They did going to do a series of sports films to fill the quota of content that they need for programming. I love that film. That's a really, really good film.
But and then even he's had his chances at Superstardom, whether it's Dragonheart or Inner Space. Mm-hmm. He's gotten those roles, but they never put him – they were never big
and
enough.
He played Jerry Lee Lewis in that movie opposite Winona Ryder. Was it Balls of Fire? What was it called?
Great Balls of Fire. Yeah. Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah, a little over the top in that one. But listen, the guy's been working consistently for the last 30 years. You know, I read an article because it was an article on one of the blog posts rating the viability of all the Jaws films. And I didn't know that. Back in the day when Dennis Quaid was the star of Jaws 3, he had substance abuse issues and said that he was completely his mind wasn't in the right place because he was doing so much cocaine during the filming of Jaws 3, which I find interesting now when I watch Jaws 3 going forward. But he's worked consistently for at least three decades long.
Do you have one that stands out that you just like automatically you think of? Because to me, I go back to a couple of B-movies. He did Dreamscape, I love.
Yeah.
It was underrated science fiction.
I agree.
And I did like him a lot in The Big Easy. I thought that was a great cop movie from Louisiana. He's really good in that. And, of course, Breaking Away as a cutter.
You know, it's interesting. You know, people could say what they want about disaster films and, like, The Day After Tomorrow, but that's another movie with immense repeatability. When that movie airs on TV, okay, I'm changing. Oh, it's The Day After Tomorrow. Get me a soda and some snacks. I'm watching me some Day After Tomorrow. The first half is really, really good in that film. The second half, not as good. But Dennis Quaid is a really good lead in that film. He anchors that film beautifully. And Jake Gyllenhaal is his son. To me, that movie really works. It's not a great movie. A lot of it's really compelling. It's obviously highly interesting, the subject matter. But I do like it a lot. And he's really good in it.
It plays better now. That has the distinction, Chuck, which you get a kick out of this. The last movie I saw at the Ziegfeld was The Day After Tomorrow.
Wow.
Opening night. And you know who was in
attendance? I'm curious. How many people in attendance opening night?
Oh, it was packed. It was
It
packed.
Wasn't really.
You know who was in attendance that night at the Ziegfeld?
Who?
Michael Moore. Watched the movie at the Ziegfeld.
Cool.
And, you know, he was kind of getting some Bowling for Common Eye. He was really becoming a environmentalist kind of person. So I assume he went there for the political nature of the film.
Right. And for people who don't know, the Ziegfeld at the time was the largest single-screen movie theater in the United States, had a lot of premieres there. Me and Mike went to see Jurassic Park there in 1993, the greatest movie-going experience of our life. 1,150 seats. Think about that. 1,150 seats, single-screen movie theater. Mike, that's a time capsule moment, a place in time that future generations will never again get a chance to experience, and that is just a factual concept, a factual matter that I just stated.
Well, we're lucky to get 1,100 people anywhere in one room together now, Chuck, to do anything, let alone a
very
movie.
True.
So we'll do this again next week, God willing. And coming up next, if you're listening on the radio, our favorite faith movies of all time. Have a happy Easter, all right, my friend?
You too, Mike. And even in these times, it's always a pleasure.
This has been a presentation of Opt-In Productions. Thanks for listening to Movie Maniacs. Be sure to subscribe to us wherever you listen to podcasts. Download one of our archived episodes or listen to our next new podcast Friday.
Podcasts by Federated Media. Podcasts by Federated Media.